supposed to be freestyling, buddy.
I know.
Chicka, chicka, chicka. Yeah, buddy, podcast. Up in this bitch.
Yeah, that is. It's official.
Ooh, yeah. This is just my ringtone.
It doesn't take nothing to do with the podcast.
It got nothing to do with the podcast. It's just my ringtone. It's the only music I was able to download. It just comes on every Galaxy phone. Yes, yes, yes. What's going on, world? This is your man, Buddy Romig, and we are back at it with another episode of The Funny. No, hold up. Let me restart that over. I'm over here saying the wrong podcast. This shit. Wrong podcast. Oh, whoa. Rewind. Chicka, chicka, chicka. So, we did that one last year. No, this is your host, Buddy Romig, and we are back at it with the Yeah Buddy podcast. That's right. We are back at it with the Yeah Buddy podcast. And this podcast is brought to you by the Comedy Cash Cow Competition. So if you know a stand-up comedian or you are a stand-up comedian and you want your chance to win $1,000 and star in your own movie, then you need to go to www.comedycashcow.com. The competition takes place May 25th in Vacaville, California, y'all. So go on ahead. That is www.comedycashcow.com for the Comedy Cash Cow competition. Go and get that $1,000. Get that rack. All right, then, y'all. So, yeah, we about to get into it. We about to get to this episode of the Yeah Buddy podcast. The Yeah Buddy podcast. And like every episode, I always try to bring in some of my friends in the entertainment business so we can just chop it up, see what we got going on, see what we've been through, just talk about our journeys in this entertainment business because it's so crazy. And this episode is like no other. This episode, man, I got my friend. He's host, man. He hosts shows all around the town from the Bay Area and Napa all the way to the Punchline Callback Bar. He's toured with Lance Woods, and he was in this movie called Ball Busters. But right now, watch out again. We're going to get into that, too. But right now, man, we're about to get it in, man. Make some noise for my good friend, Mr. Marcus Mangham. How you doing, bro?
Good. I'm good. What up, buddy?
So, yes, sir. We'll get that right.
Yeah, we black. We got to do better than that.
Let's close it out. We'll get it good. I mean, this is some tea and tequila. That's what it is.
That's what's up.
So, Marcus, man, how you doing, bro?
I'm good, bro. Appreciate you having me out here. Appreciate it.
Oh, man, I appreciate you being on and stuff like that. So, you're not originally from California. You're from, North Carolina?
Yeah, small town, Salisbury, North Carolina. That was my hometown.
Nice. And what was it like being up there in Salisbury?
It's cool. Like, I'm from a small town, so, you know, like, one of them, you know, like, everybody knows each other. Kind of like an industrial town where everybody worked at a warehouse, pretty much. Like, even my dad, pretty much most of my family were all warehouse workers. Or they either worked at a warehouse or the VA hospital. That was about it.
Nice. That. You had me a Salisbury steak for dinner last
night. Totally different song.
Oh, my bad. So what brought you out here to California?
I had a friend that played basketball back in the day, Bobby Jackson. Okay. And I used to come out here and visit all the time. I would visit. And then I just asked him one day, what do you think about me living out here? He was like, hell, I don't care. Like, I don't have no family out here. So I gave it a try, probably maybe about a year into me living here. He ended up getting traded. So then I went back to North Carolina. And then I realized I don't want to be here anymore. So now I'm back in Sacramento on the Buddy podcast.
California is definitely different than North Carolina, man. So what got you into doing, were you doing stand-up comedy when you were in North Carolina?
Dude, I didn't touch a microphone to do any kind of comedy until age 37. I had already been here for a while. Honestly, I never had any training or had thoughts of doing comedy. I hated doing book reports in front of the classroom, yeah. Much less trying to make people laugh. But it's just something I wanted to get out of my system. I did one open mic at Laughs Unlimited.
Okay.
1 3-minute set, and something about that just bit me, and I just kept coming back, and now, funny business.
Yeah, that's how it goes. That's funny. So what made you want to just say, like, all right, man, it's time for me to just get on the mic?
I think I just wanted to see if I could do it. Because people would be like, man, you're funny. You should try it. And I'm like, man, I can't do that. Like, especially like, I wasn't a stand-up guy. I was more of like a TV guy. Like, I watched every damn show coming up growing up. Like, 227, Night Court, like all that stuff. I watched everything. So I would watch that and I'd be like, that's funny. Or I feel like I can do that. But then it's like actually doing it. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. So just one day I said I wanted to try, and I told maybe 2 people I was going to do open mic. I was not going to have 45 people up there watching me eat it.
Hell no.
So it's not an option. So I did that. I did that little 3 minutes, and I survived it. So I was just like, all right, well, let's keep seeing how far you can go with it. So That's it. But yeah, I had no ambition at all of ever doing stand up.
Cause you're kind of more so like a just a reserved guy in general.
Yeah, I'm more of a laid back and watch you do a bunch of silly shit. I'm not the guy that acts like I don't start the party. But if it gets going, you know, I'll jump in there.
I'll do my little two step every now and then. I feel like that's how it is with like comedians. You're gonna just get one of the other. It's either gonna be like in real life they're just super reserved, just chill. Like man, only time I really want to talk is when I'm on the microphone.
Yeah,
then you're gonna get the other comedian that's just an intention whore like 24/7. It is a very dichotomy of what goes on up here.
But the crowd, they think we all act like Krusty the Clown.
Yeah, like that's funny. Yeah, like
we got our own personalities. Like,
yeah,
everybody's different.
Mm-hmm. And so with that, you probably get a lot of people that like when you tell them that you're a stand-up comedian, you're like, oh yeah, tell me a joke.
All the time.
Yeah.
Make me laugh, funny man. Like, now I'm definitely not telling you a joke.
Yeah, no. What I will tell you is that you could come to my comedy show. You really want to get these out. You got to pay.
Yeah, you want to pay? I'll tell you all the jokes you want till your money runs out.
Yeah. Two out of minimum. So when did you start? So you say you start off like hit open mic. When did you start like producing shows? Because you be producing a lot of shows, bro.
Let me say, maybe a year into my stand-up career, Robert Berry offered me a show at Comedy Spot. Okay. I didn't know anything about producing shows, but I did know that, like, talking to Lance and a lot of those guys coming up, that's what they were doing. It's like, you want to get stage time, produce your own show. You can have all the time you want then. You don't have to fuss at anybody or, can I get on, man? You got your own stuff going. So I was like, that's the route. So I just started producing shows at Comedy Spot. And that led to other stuff because with the Comedy Spot, I got that. I remember we had our show. After that show, we drove down to check out the Pink Martini for food.
Mm.
And we just got in conversation with a guy and he was like, well, what do you think about doing the show here? So then all of a sudden, now I'm running two shows. And then that's just how, it, you know, word of mouth and other people. Well, I want comedy at my place, too. And that's how it is. But it's seldom we even go searching for it. They just word of mouth, like it's a good product apparently, so they keep bringing us back.
So how long have you been doing the shows at the Pink Martini then?
I think at least probably what, 6 years maybe at this point.
6 years?
5 or 6 years.
5 or 6 years. Damn, okay, for sure. So you've been ready to burn coal, baby.
Yeah. Cool. Even during the pandemic. Keep that on the low.
Keep that on the low.
We had the little outdoor shows, little patio shows, but
that was out in Rockland though, right?
Yeah, they don't have laws.
They don't give a fuck. They don't give a fuck.
There's no laws in Rockland. You do what you want.
They like fine us. we don't care. We keep it our bars open. We get it people drunk. Ain't nothing to do. We just at home with this depression. Let us get drunk.
Yeah, they got their own set of rules and politics down there. But thank you, Rockland. Thank you.
Shout out to Rockland.
Said never by black people. Yeah,
never. We get our check and then we dip. We've been to those shows. Rockland, Placerville. Yeah, the borders of Roseville. Yeah, we get our check and we go
out.
So what's it like? What's your process like? Like actually, like producing shows, going out there, finding comedians, and then just the promotion aspect of it.
When it comes to picking comedians, it's random that I book anybody I've never seen before, just because I feel like it's my reputation on the line. And even though I can't tell them what to say, or I don't even know how it's going to work half of the time, because you can say, "Yeah, this guy has funny jokes," and that might be the one night he wants to try some new stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But I try to get people that I've already seen before. And I don't know, I would just say, I try to get people I've seen before, and then I try to get people that's cool and not going to start any trouble at the spot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because like I say, it's my reputation. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't look at it as just, well, I'm making a couple dollars, so who cares what they say? As long as I close it out and I have a good set, that matters. Because that's your product out there.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that we definitely do get confused sometimes is the fact that this is called, like, the entertainment business.
Yeah.
You know? And so we forget, or show business. And, you know, business is the longer word. So that's kind of, like, the most important thing that you got to really understand about that this is a business, man.
Yeah.
You got to, like, say, protect your reputation, man. You've been running the show for 6 years. That's the thing you want to do is, man, fuck up your paycheck.
Yeah. A lot of things I don't think a lot of comics understand, like, it is a business, and you could be the funniest person in the world, but if it doesn't fit the venue, they might not want sexual type of jokes or whatever it is. If they're hiring me and they say absolutely not, I'm not going to book somebody. I know that's all they do is the opposite of what you, but then they take it personal. Like, well, you won't book me, but it would be terrible for me to book you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose my business for you to have 5 minutes set.
Yeah. I've done that a couple of times on accident. They would be like, they would come back up to me. I'm like, well, you know what? Lay down the rules to me. Just explain to me what type of comedy.
Yeah. What do you want?
What is your audience and stuff all like that? Cause it could get, because comedy is subjective. It is very subjective. And sometimes, you know, saying what's funny to one comedian is not going to be funny to 100 other people, the audience.
They just,
what the fuck?
And everybody loves the unpredictability of a comedian until it goes wrong.
Until it becomes unpredictable.
Just crazy guys until then.
Shit. That's hilarious. And so now, not only are you doing the shows up in Rockland, you also have the show out in Napa.
Yeah, so I do a monthly show. Every third Thursday, we do a show out in Rockland. I mean, not in Rockland, in Napa, at Be Bubbly. It's a tasting room in downtown.
Okay.
And we do the comedy behind the bar.
Yeah. So I've been to that show. That's a good show, man. That's a good show. Because people drunk off of wine is different than people drunk off of, like, Hennessy or...
Yeah. A wine bottle thrown in my head.
Or people just drunk off of beer. It's three totally different audiences. You get, like, the sophisticated people, like, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Or they're just laid back and they're sleepy, so...
Yeah, they just...
But there's nothing really pops off at the tasting rooms in Napa.
Mm. That's a fun room. I've been to that room before and stuff like that. So that's always
it is a difficult room sometimes just because you have people from everywhere. You know, Napa's kind of like a tourist town.
Yeah.
So you might be like, oh, yeah, I got this joke about Vacaville. And it's like, this guy's like, I'm from Michigan. What the hell's Vacaville?
I'm from Yuba City. I'm from Yuba City. They're like, oh, what?
Where's that at?
What is that? They're a Yuba City. Where
you say the punchline and they just stare at you because they have no idea what you're talking about.
It's like, I guess it was funny. Yeah. He's laughing. Yeah. The comedian's laughing, so I guess it's funny.
Wherever truck he's at.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got a truck. Man, and then you've been doing that show. You also got the show at the Punchline.
Yeah, so
you hosted the open mic.
Yeah, so every fourth Wednesday, I do open mic at Punchline. Mm-hmm. And I think in April, every Wednesday, I think we're going to have an open mic. So basically, it's going to be for sure every fourth Wednesday. But when they have open Wednesdays, I just go ahead and do open mic just to feel, rather than just have a room sitting there.
Yeah. And so what was the process like? How did you get hooked up with hosting the open mic at the Punchline?
Honestly, I think it was either a referral. Nobody officially told me. I just got an email and said, a couple people thought you would be a good fit for doing open mic. Are you interested? And I was just like, let's give it a shot. Cause I know we needed one. I'm like, how many years do me and you run around from this bar to this bar to that bar? Like, can we not just have one night?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know exactly what it's talking about. That's why I was producing so many shows last year just because I was like, man, I need this stage time, man. Wherever I could get a room at to open up a room to tell these jokes, man, let me do it. Because, I mean, at one point, we had a lot of open mics, it felt like.
Yeah.
Like we had a lot. Like, at one point, like, probably, like, pre-pandemic, we was having, like, three comedy open mics a night at least, and then like different like music open mics that they would be friendly, like the comedians go up and tell jokes. But then after the pandemic, it kind of slowed down. And I feel like it started even like we're at a point right now where it's kind of like, I mean, we have a lot of open mics compared to like other cities and stuff like that, but like it's still not enough for Sacramento because we got a lot of comedians up here.
Yeah.
We got a lot.
I don't think I realized how many rooms and shows we had until the world shut down. And like a lot of stuff didn't come back.
Yeah.
But like, I remember even back then, I mean, I knew what I was doing a little bit in comedy, but I was doing three shows a week.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like if I've been on that track now, I'd probably been doing 12 shows a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was like, I remember I was even just doing a show out of a bookstore just because we had so many rooms. Shout out to Carol's Books. It's not around nowhere. It got shut down because of the damn pandemic. But like, that's just how it was. Like anywhere there was it didn't even have to be a comedy room. I was like, if there was four walls, we had a comedy room. We were doing shows up here.
Yeah,
shit.
Your old room. I'm like, can I even talk loud in here?
Yeah.
It's like a library. I'm gonna tell a joke.
Yeah, that was why we had like, especially, oh my God, because that was on a
That was off of Del Paso. Yeah. Like that, that it was bad then too, because there was the homeless situation was bad. So we got a lot of we got a whole lot of homeless bums. Just, they didn't even come for comedy. They just came for shelter.
I'm gonna get you canceled.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they was all like, we ain't even here for no jokes. We just here for a seat and a heater. That's it, man. We, oh my word. Yeah, but yeah, now we back out. Then the pandemic's over with and stuff like that. Try to get these rooms back open, but it feels like they're coming up and then they get it shut down. Get it open up, they shut it back down. It is just kind of like, we just
yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like the whole dynamic has changed. Like, what people used to do, or they don't have the money that they used to. Like, I just feel like we used to do a lot of extra stuff that you can't really do now. And it reflect, like, you better have a great product to get a bunch of people in any room now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Look at the movie theater. I don't care what comes out. They ain't going.
No, hell no. Hell no, man. And that's another thing I was going to bring up, too, because, like, I was reading this article the other day about from this casting director, and she was just talking about how, like, just... he would just try to break into like the film side right now is social media is very heavy. You got to have like that huge like social media phone. But I'm not really the type of comedian that like is going to be on like my like Instagram every day. Just be like,
well, yeah, look at me.
Yeah.
Brushing my teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like doing skits and stuff like that. Like, oh,
yeah.
If I do it, it's got to be. I don't want to say for a purpose because, you know, building up a fan base, building up an audience on social media is a purpose. But there, like for me, I just feel like there's just got to be something more to it. Probably because like when I got started into trying to pursue this entertainment stuff, like the social media was not a thing at all. So it was always like in the back of my mind about stuff like that. Do you think about that type of stuff?
No, I get what you're saying because... I think it just comes down to personality. Mm. Like, some people have it, and they like to do the skits, and they like to walk around with the camera, and that's on them. That's not my personality. Like, I feel weird doing that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not. Now, I know sometimes you just have to do certain stuff or whatever. Might be shooting a skit or whatever with some people, so you might have to. But me, personally, like, how I actually feel, it feels weird to just get up and walk around places with my phone in my hand and be like, look at me doing fun stuff. Wish you were here.
Yeah. But you know who has made it, who kind of like does have the blueprint down for that, the whole social media thing and just being interactive with people is Lance.
Oh, yeah. Lance is great with it.
Yeah.
But I don't even think that's an act. When I go to the mall with Lance, he's the same guy he is on social media. I'm like, will you leave that person alone? You don't know them. Like, what is wrong with you?
That's funny. No, yeah. But shout out to Lance Woods, because Lance Woods actually helped me launch this podcast.
That's cool.
Because, he was the very first guest that I had. I was like, man, I'm just trying something new out, bro. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So, no worries. All good, bro. I'll sign through. So, definitely shout out to Lance Woods.
Lance, that's my dog for real. I have no idea why he even took me under his wing, but he was one of the first people when I started. Because I remember I was going to do the comedy class. He was like, man, you don't need that. Just meet me at the club. So I met him at Strikes.
Yeah.
He had a show down there one night.
And the bowling alley?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had a show down. Drew Burke's show was down there. And I went down there, and I think it was him, and it was Jay Rich, Drew, and I can't remember who all else was on the show, but I didn't know anybody in comedy. But I kept running into Lance, and then I went to that show, and then anything after that, I think maybe 2 days later, we went to San Francisco, and he was like, you can roll with me. I'm sitting there chilling in the back. He's like, good news, bro. I got you some time. I'm like, I don't want no time. I've done one open mic, and that was 2 days ago.
Oh, shit.
I ended up going on stage.
How did that set go?
Honestly, it went way better than I thought because I thought I was set up big time. Because when he got me, he's like, I got you some time, bro. I'm like, I'm back there pacing back and forth like it's packed in this place. Mm-hmm. Pacing back and forth. And then he has Brian Hicks brings me out. And so it's Brian's room. And he's like, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to love this guy. He's been crushing it all over the country. Ladies and gentlemen, please stand up and put your hands together. And in my head, I'm like, why did you put these expectations on me?
Yeah.
I've done 3 minutes, period. But I went out there. I remember I did some hip hop joke I had back then. And I did something else about when people in the club, but they step on your shoes. And that's like, it's like hopscotch trying to go through the club, not to step when you're in a black club. And they love that. And I was like, God bless, good night. And I remember I was like, thank God.
Yeah, that's always bad, especially with like your like you first start getting into stand up, and like I said with the next class up.
Yeah.
Like whenever they like give you like that time, you're like, bro, I don't know if I'm ready for this. It's always that kind of like that antsy feeling. Like, I have no idea how this is gonna go and shit like that. Because I think it's one comedian, Dave Gaskins. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he does stand up anymore, but I ran into him like last week and stuff like that. But like, yeah, I went to go to the Sacramento Punchline, bro, just to check it out, just to support the show and comedy and stuff. Like that. I was like, he's like, bro, I'm gonna get you some stage time. I'm like, nah, that's okay, don't worry about it. He's like, you playing with me, bro, you playing. He's like, nah, man, I'm gonna get you some stage time. I'm like, nah, bro, you playing. So I went downstairs to go smoke with Andre Bailey and shit like that. We just smoking. The next thing somebody's like, downstairs, like, hey, buddy, they looking for you. I'm like, well,
I'm like, nah. What did I do? I didn't pay my check.
I didn't do nothing. Like, nah, man, you about to go up on stage, bro. You got like a minute to get up here. So I'm over here, got over here fucking smoking. So I'm over here running up as fast as I can, bro. I'm over here, jump on stage, bro. I still got like the smoke in my lungs, bro. I'm over here like coughing. People just see the smoke.
They think the Capitol building on fire.
Yeah, it looked like a monster was attacked, like, ah. And I was like, this is not good at all, man. This is not good at all. But yeah, I learned from there, always be prepared. If somebody tells you you're getting stage time, So be prepared for that.
Yeah, I think it was Tony Roberts. He told me, if you show up at the club, just be prepared just in case. Mm. So anytime I go to a club, I at least go through a couple jokes in my head just in case. Because it's been a couple times. It's like, somebody didn't show up. You're here. Like,
yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, that's also a important thing too, man. Just showing up to support, because you never know what that could turn into. And like you said, you have brought up, I see you a lot on time. You hang out with like Lance and Tony Roberts and stuff like that. I feel like that's like from my perspective, I see like those are like the two like mentors or influences that really like kind of like, you know, say somebody that take you under the wing and like teach you things and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I told you me and Lance were cool. And then that just happened by association with Tony, because Tony and Lance are like best friends. So then we would all just end up hanging out or whatever. And he thought I was pretty funny, so then he invited me to do a weekend with him. It was all guest sets, but it was at Tommy T's out here in Rancho. And I did pretty good that weekend, and I was only 6 months into comedy. And I forgot the lady's name that used to run it. Maybe you remember.
They used to run the Tommy T's?
Yeah, so the white lady, she had her glasses, but I don't remember her name.
I feel like it was like just like a two-letter name, like a syllable, like AJ.
Yeah, or JD or something.
I can't remember, but yeah.
But yeah, so she saw me that weekend, and so she was like, she hit me up maybe that Monday afterwards. And I remember I was at my job, and she was like, do you want to do a weekend? She's like, next weekend we got Marsha Warfield coming in, so maybe you can just open up for her. So I'm like, hell yeah, let's do it. So then I do it, but then I get there. She don't know how young I am in the game. She's like, just go up there and do maybe 12 minutes, and then we'll bring Marsha up. I got 7 minutes to my name.
Yeah.
So I go up there, and I play it cool in front of her. I go upstairs, and I'm just trying to put any notes or anything together. What was that one thing I thought about? Some kind of way I powered through and got through that and made it through the next night. And luckily, the second show got canceled. So, So luckily, but I survived it. But yeah, it was rough at first. But yeah, I don't know why Tony took a liking to me, but he did. So that's what, like Lance and Tony, those are both my homies for real.
Yeah. So what's it like having those two type of mentors? Influences in the game, just like could constantly be in your ear, or somebody that you could text to for advice on how to handle the business. Because, like I said, as much like the comedy scene up here is fucking strong. Like, there's a strong ass comedy scene for the aspect of just how many comedians there are, and then just how many like hitters there are, or just like are making moves. But to have like probably like the two biggest ones, you know, in the city, what's it like having those two as I said, mentors, people that you could like talk to about shit, and not even on the comedy team, just talk to about life.
Yeah, no, I say it's cool, because like with Lance, I feel like they're both at two totally different stages. You know, like Tony is at that like legend status. So he's done everything, but Lance is on his ass. Like, Lance is coming up in the game big time. So it's kind of like I get to see what the finished product and what it takes to get to that product. But at the same time, man, like, I'm more laid back and quiet, but we're all just clowns. Like, when we get together, it's random we even talk about comedy. Mm-hmm. We either cracking jokes on each other or talking about something totally unrelated to what we got going on.
Yeah.
And Lance and Tony is like herding cats. They're all over the place. They're like, they are best buddies. We got, well, like, I went on the road with them. I'm like, good Lord, I'm taking care of children.
But those are the type of genuine relationships that you want, like, because you want to have those type of relationships with, like, comedians where you don't have to be a comedian. I'm like, okay, I could just be, like, I could just be Marcus right now, or I could just sit back and be buddy around this person. Yeah. I'm not worried about being the fucking comedian. And
because, like, I'm sure you've experienced, like, maybe a newer comic and he knows who you are, but he's putting on a show. He's not being himself. Like, that's annoying. Like,
yeah,
stop trying to make me laugh. Just be funny naturally. But yeah. Hey, I was thinking about that. Look at that guy, huh?
Most definitely. Especially when I was doing the groups last year. I'm like, man, what about this? I'm like, bro, just go up through your thing.
What about this premise?
Yeah. All these people sitting in the audience, those are the people you got to worry about. Don't worry about my opinion, bro. Just, man, you come up, make sure you're doing good. Make sure your head is on your shoulders, bro. And other than that, we could be cool and stuff like that. So you got it. So you've been on the road with them. You got any interest in any stories about being on the road with them that you could talk about, or just being on the road in general?
I haven't done many dates, but the one thing that did stick out, Tony gave me an opportunity to go back to North Carolina and perform in front of my family and people I hadn't seen since I graduated high school. But they actually came out, which was weird because, you know, I was a quiet dude in school. Like, it might be five people, but probably maybe 30 to 40 people throughout the weekend came through and checked me out. And it was cool, though. I was like, for me, that was kind of like a dream, because just like, from being from a small town, go all the way to California and then get to come back with Lance and Tony. You're not just like, hey, well, I got to do that one bar that one night. That was fun. It's like, no, I'm coming back to a comedy club with two monsters. So for me, that was great. So
they was looking at you like, okay, that's that boy. Right?
Yeah,
he's not
full of shit. I thought he was lying. I swear I did.
But this California boy. California boy.
How's Eddie Murphy? No idea.
We don't do that up here.
That's one thing I will say. When I say California, it doesn't matter where. They think I run into damn Britney Spears and Eddie Murphy and damn Kim Kardashian at Rite Aid.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen any of these people. I live in Sacramento. No. I see Slamson.
Yeah. Yeah, I might be lucky to run into one of the G League players up here, if I'm lucky, or maybe a radio DJ, maybe somebody from 102.5 if I'm lucky. But yeah,
maybe Slamson is centerfolds, but
still in his mascot, just getting a lap dance up here.
Just head, no suit.
It's like, this doesn't go.
gotta relax. Even I need time.
Shit, that's funny, man. That was, this is just a side story, but like, I used to be the mascot for Golden One Credit Union. So not like, you know, not the Kings, but like Golden One
Credit Union. Were you a check stub?
No. I was a Golden Retriever.
That's what's up.
But I used to work a lot with Samson. That boy pretty fucking wild and stuff like that. He wild and stuff. I got fired though, because I was wearing Laker socks one time to one of the promo events. They was like, buddy, man, get into the mascot outfit. I was like, all right, cool, man. So I'm over here getting, they had no dressing room for me to wear. So I'm like, all right, I'll just get dressed right here. And I took them off. They was like, dude, Lakers socks? I'm all like, yeah, like, you know, we're about to do some Kings promo, right? I was like, yeah, so. I was like, yeah, fine, but I'm a Lakers fan. I don't know what to do.
That's
so
what's up. You're taking it too far.
Took it too far. And they said, yeah, you can't come back. he's rapping the wrong set. They was all like, yeah, you got to keep that on.
Yeah, you had to set tripping, man.
It's like, keep that on the low. But yeah, working with the Kings. But you said earlier, Bobby Jackson was the person that brought you out here and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what's that? So what was that connection like? You.
So
I see you doing like working, not necessarily work with the Kings, but up at the G League, the Stockton Arena, and all that stuff.
Yeah. So basically, him and my uncle were best friends in high school, and I was just a kid on the sideline. Like, I would watch them go play ball. They would play every day, and they played on the same high school team together. And Bobby told him, he said, if I ever make it, I'm going to come back for you. So not me. He told my uncle that I will come back for you. Mm. So once he got to Sacramento, my uncle was just like kind of like in a rut in my life. I just want to start over completely. And Bobby said, I remember what I told you. I got you. So he brought my uncle out. My uncle was out here probably 4 years before I even came to California. And then I came out here to visit him. And I don't know, it was just, I think Sacramento was the first place I ever went to where I wasn't like, I'm ready to go back home. Because most of the time I would be like, yeah, I had fun in D.C. I had fun in Atlanta. That was cool. But I'm ready to get my ass back home. This was like one of the first places I came to. I was like, you know, I actually like it out here. Like, I might stay a couple extra days. So I thought I just kept going back and forth. And I'm not going to lie, it didn't hurt having an NBA friend. You know, they gave me all kind of perks.
Yeah.
If I don't have on the right clothes, who cares? Come in the club.
Yeah.
Now I got to wear a damn Easter suit to go in the Rite Aid. You can't get But I don't know, just being out here was different in the vibe. And I was just like, let's give it a shot. So my uncle, he ended up going back because he still had his son back in North Carolina. But for me, I was just like, this is a fresh start. I don't have any kids, so let's do it. So that's why I'm here now.
Yeah. I go like, this is a true story. Like, I actually had I had a name drop you one time and stuff like that because I ran into one. Bobby Jackson likes to party. Bobby Jackson likes to party. And I ran into him at a... Oh, I can't remember what the name of the bar was.
Faces.
Not Faces. It was in Folsom. Powerhouse, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I ran to him up at Powerhouse. I was like, Bobby, man, Bobby. He's like, yeah, it's Bobby. It's like, man, you know my boy Marcus, man. That's my boy right there. He's like, oh, yeah, for sure. Well, come party with us, bro. Come party with us. So, yeah, we... Oh, yeah.
Owe me a drink, buddy.
Yeah, I do owe you a drink. Yeah. It was just me, Bobby, some drinks, and some snow bunnies.
And Folsom, y'all trying to get killed. Get out of there. What you doing?
Yeah. Well, Bobby's like 6-something, so ain't nobody attacking Bobby. But then I was just pretending to be the security up to that point. So once I got in, nobody was like, fucking with me and shit.
That's
but, but yeah, dude, I'll owe you a drink next time.
I appreciate that.
I had to name drop you one time. I was like, yeah, Bobby, man, Marcus is my dude right there. Man, oh, yeah, for sure, man. Come party with us, bro. Come get some drinks. I was like, for sure. We up in here. And then he was also up at Chris Webber. You know Chris Webber as well?
Yeah, but that just came from being with Bobby. And back in the day, like at that time, Bobby was, he was married, but Webb wasn't. Mm-hmm. So we were used to going out all the time. But then when Bobby and his lady got serious, he stopped going out. Webb was like, well, I ain't married, so if y'all want to go out, we can still go out. So me and my uncle started going out with him, and we just ended up building a friendship to how we ended up being cool. Yeah. But I feel like a lot of it is just like personality, because he's laid back, I'm laid back. He's super into music, I am too. Mm. So we just all had that connection.
Mm.
And also, I've never been like, not y'all like being arrogant about it, but I've never just been like, oh my God, it's Chris Webber. I've just never had that in me. If anything, I talk crazy to him and that makes him like me more. Like,
yeah.
You can't talk to me like that. Why not?
You treat him like a human and stuff like that. A lot of people, oh my God, it's a Sacramento legend, Chris Webber. Yeah. But he was just all like, no.
Yeah, then I'll be like, oh, look at me. I'm here for Chris Webber. Who cares? Can we go?
Yeah. Which is, that's always cool when you could have that type of, that dynamic with people, because like I said, it could be just being somebody in that spotlight. I can imagine it, like a lot of people just trying to get something from you. So when there's somebody that comes around you where they could be like, oh, I could just genuinely connect with this person. I could sit back and chill. This person don't want nothing from me except just good convo. Those are the type of relationships that you want in this business.
I think that's something I learned from Bobby, though, just being on the outside and watching him, like coming up from the Kings to start and into retirement, and just seeing how people treat you and how things go and how you can be on top of the world and everybody loves you. And as your popularity goes, so do they. You get back popular, they come out of the wood where, hey, remember me? Hey, I didn't forget about you. And it made me realize none of it's real, man. And I know Bobby has the same problems that everybody else. I watched him. I was there with him all the time. And same arguments, same everything. You just got money now. You got the same problem. So that's why I look at him the same way. Like, just, you know, before that, you would look at movie stars and be like, man, they got it made, whatever. They at work.
Yeah,
that is not fun.
They're like, leave me alone, bro. Don't talk to me right now, bro. I'm over here trying to. I mean, it looks like I'm memorizing these lines and it looks fun, but like, no, this is work.
Or even award shows, like they think it's so great. I'm working. I'm trying not to mess this up. I'm trying to not have a terrible look. I don't want to be a meme tomorrow.
Yeah,
because my shoulder sleeve came down or something stupid. Like, it's a lot more that people don't even think about.
Yeah. It's a lot. No, yeah, I've seen some shit on some movie sets, man, where people just be like stressing out, just yelling. I'm all like, God damn, man, we supposed to be making a movie. I thought we were the jury, but no, we just at work.
They say cut, or start the movie. There you go. So yeah. Totally different person.
Oof, yeah. Totally different people, man. What are your goals and aspects? Do you want to like get to that level in the comedy game? Like, do you eventually want to like be in movies and all that good jazz?
Honestly, it sounds dumb, but I go back and forth because I do love comedy, but sometimes I feel like I probably want to get into writing and be more behind the scenes. Because I do love the comedy, but just sometimes it's a lot just because it's just not my personality. Like we were talking about, like, I'm not the look at me guy. And a lot of times you have to be that. Sometimes I don't feel like being that guy, but it's part of the job. So it's kind of like, but I also think it's maybe a learning process for me. Like, it is a job. Like, just turn it on, do your 30 minutes or whatever you got to do, and then you're done. But people don't realize, like, yeah, I'm only doing 30 minutes, but I've been thinking about this 30 minutes since I opened my eyes this morning.
Yeah. And then once I get off the stage, I'm going to be thinking of that 30 minutes again. And it's going to be a whole different tone of mind. So I'm like, man, I missed this tagline. I could have done this better. It's definitely a lot that goes into the whole process of just trying to knock out that 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So you go back and forth, which I totally get. I totally get. That's one reason why I started this whole podcast, just because I was all like, man, I'm not like the social, like we were going back to like the whole social media aspect and stuff like that. But people are just all like, you got to have something.
Yeah.
You got to do something. So I was like, all right, shit, I guess I'll just, everybody else is doing a podcast. Let me just start up this train and just see where it goes. But it's also been beneficial for me, just like I say, from hearing the perspective of other people just like us. Cause like I said, we all, like how you were just saying, like we all go through the same things in life outside of the comedy game. It's all the same. So just seeing what other people's perspective is, it helps put like that perspective in me too. Just all like, okay, this whole entire like fame or whatever you may be. Cause I feel like a lot of times it's something that people outside of the business put on you. They kind of put that aspect on you. Like, man, you gotta be doing this. You should be doing this. I'm like, no, I just gotta be me.
Yeah.
I just got to be me. I just got to be chilling.
And everybody has a bright idea what you should do with your life.
Yeah.
Like, you don't do any of this stuff you tell me to do. You should get up at 7 and do this. You don't do any of that.
Yeah.
But it's that easy the way you telling me you do it.
Yeah. You ain't never wrote a joke for you to give me a tag. You ain't never been on an audition to tell me I shouldn't be in this movie. Let me just do me. Because, you know, it's this whole idea like being like this Hollywood stuff and everything like that, man, it could be freaking hectic. It could be a lot. So no, I definitely get where how you was talking about just doing the whole behind the scenes stuff. That's why I was trying to start it last year, like just trying to produce more, because I was like, that seems more like on the behind the scenes type of thing. So like, even if I don't want to have to host the show, I mean, at least producing it, I'm still involved to some type of aspect, but I don't got to be in the limelight, don't got to be in the spotlight to where now afterwards everybody's coming up to me like, oh, you, and then they want that attention because I'm like, man, my social battery be done after a while.
I'll be honest, like when I do weekends, I'm done because I'm just not normal, like not speaking and being the mayor and shaking hands and kissing babies. So when I'm done, I'm done. Like Monday, I'm like, it's over, thank you Jesus.
I was gonna ask that because like what, like after like doing like so many shows, do you have like that kind of like, I'm gonna say like that wind down period, like I'm just not doing nothing today.
Yeah, I will have those one day. Not many, but yeah, if we like on the road for a minute or something, that day after, I'm chilling. Because I'm mentally, I'm done, and I just want to get back focused. And then the next day, let's go get them. But I need me at least one day to chill. But even after shows, like, I can't just come home and get into bed. Like, I don't care if it was a good show or a bad show. Like, I can't just go to sleep. Like, that adrenaline doesn't cut off for a minute.
You just be laying down, and you just eyes wide open. And then, like, the second you close them, you be thinking of something. And then you just right back to being alert again. Like, ah, damn.
Yeah.
I'll be feeling like I'd be like the laziest awoke person ever. I'd be wanted to not do anything, but then just the way my brain operates, I'm like, oh, nope, I gotta get up, I gotta do this, I gotta write this tag that I just found out about this, or you know, I'm like, now I gotta try to find the next job, where's the next gig coming from. It's just I'll be getting to wind down and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm the same way though. Sometimes, like, I need to just chill for a second. Next thing I know, I'm knee deep in something on YouTube. I'm like, I didn't rest at all.
Yeah, yeah. And then especially do with this, because like whatever I talk to like most people, I'm like, well, what do y'all do to like, you know, just to relax or wind down? But I watch TV and stuff like that. I was like, well, shit, I can't really just sit back and watch TV or watch anything, because that's still just puts my mind right back into the whole aspect of like entertainer and stuff like that. I'm all like, now I'm over here studying like the actor, the way they're working, or if I just want to like just to sit back and watch a comedy show or just watch some jokes or just hear somebody tell some jokes like on YouTube, I'm all like, damn, that's a good tag. I could do
analyzing
this. It's totally different. So like the whole wind down is it can get tricky. So I'm like, I just got to do nothing. And I don't smoke weed no more either. So then that's the other aspect of it too. So now I'm just really like,
just staring.
Yeah, just staring up into the world, like waiting and stuff like that. And then one thing I wanted to talk to you about and stuff was the movie Ball Busters.
Yeah.
Was that your first time working on like a movie?
It was, yeah.
Okay.
So how that even came about, my boy Chris Michael Holly, he had hit me up randomly. I was at my job at the time at Lexus. He was like, hey, man, they got these auditions at Comedy Spot. If you want in, you better come down here. And I'm like, I got to at least try. But I'm like, I never acted at all. Like, I didn't know anything. So I come down there and they ask me, they just say, do stand up. Mm-hmm. It's like, do maybe 10 minutes of stand up. So I do stand up and they had me do a couple scenes or whatever, see if I'll work out for this role or that role. A couple of them I did terribly on. And Lance came with me.
Okay.
So we both went out there. And basically, I just did my set or whatever. Lance did a couple things. And it was kind of like a little mini talent show they were doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So some of them were like real deal actors. I could tell. I'm like, why am I even in this room? Yeah, like,
they got headshots. They got a resume. They got a monologue. What is this?
Super proper. I'm like, I don't know what's happening right now. But it was cool. I just did that. I did a couple minutes of stand-up and maybe 2 minutes. I mean, 2 days later, I just get a call and it was like, hey, can you come do the such and such at McClellan Airport? And I was like, all right, let's do it. And even when I got there, I had no idea what was going on. Like, here's the makeup chair. I'm like, oh, okay.
It's like, makeup? What? No. I don't do makeup. What are you talking
like,
about?
Pause, but I want to make the movie, so. So, yeah, that's pretty much how it came about, man. He just looked, Holly looked out for me, and it ended up working out, you know.
And so what did you do on the movie set?
Oh, I was a security guard.
Okay.
So I got to toss a couple people out the door. That was about it. But I don't know. It was cool, though, like, just being on the scene, just seeing how many times you have to shoot and trying to make it look natural when it's not natural. And, like, Jerry O'Connell was like, hey, good job, because I actually tossed his ass out the door. So,
so way to throw me around.
Like, make it look real. I'm like, all right, get your ass out of here. I'm going
to kick his ass real quickly.
But, yeah, I just thought the whole experience was good. You know, like, it was funny just being on set and seeing how everything actually works. The guy with the boom mic, he dropped the shit accidentally. So then we had to reshoot the scene again. It was just like, I don't know. It was just cool for me, the experience of it.
Did y'all have lunch on set?
Afterward. We had to wrap dinner, I guess.
Oh, y'all had to afterward. That's one thing I know. Whenever I determine what a good movie set is by the lunch. Like, if it's a good lunch and shit, I'm like, all right, cool, we good. I don't care what goes wrong, whatever may be wrong. As long as they got a good lunch and a good craft service, I'm like, we can chill. I'll be out here eating. It's all good and stuff like that. But no, shout out to Christopher Michael Hawley. Because funny story is, Chris, he actually cast me in my very first movie. It was a movie called, what was it called? Oh, Left and Loose in the Lot. And it was this
definitely looking that up.
Yeah, go.
Left and Loose, but getting naked out here.
Left and Loose in the Lot. And it was this.
It's like a truck stop movie.
Oh my word.
It was a lot loose.
Close. No, it was a stoner movie. It was a stoner movie. Man, it started like, at the time, it was the two biggest DJs that was on 102.5. So it was the Specialist and Wayne Wayne. Mm-hmm. And they was two stoner security guards at this parking lot complex. And I was just one of the stoner kids or whatever. We was just chilling, and they ended up stealing like our snacks and shit like that.
Yeah.
But that was, I remember, like, because he gave me my very first lines in a movie. He was like, is that your hand shaped like a gun? And like, that was my first line in a movie. But like, we went to go check out the movie premiere, and I brought like my folks and a couple of my friends with us. We watched that shit. I was like, "Dad, buddy, you in a movie and shit? That's dope as shit." And then once it came out on DVD, I had like a big like a house party to like watch that shit. And the whole entire scene that I was in got cut out.
So you just at a house party.
So I was just at a house party, just watching this shit, and I did the build, and I knew it too, because like the scene where I was in, where it was supposed to come up, it just like jumped, and it like went to something else, and I was just all like,
"Got me."
I was like, "I got to get out of here." Put my mom to the side, but hey, I'm leaving. We're at your party, we're watching your movie. I'm like, "Nah, I'm not in it."
That's
like,
what's up.
She's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "I'm not in the movie, man. They cut me out. They cut me out." So I just took off pissed. I was mad. They gonna be like, "That was a good ass movie." I'm like, "Shut up." But no, shout out to Christopher Hawley, because he put me on first movie. And we're both alumni from Wheatland High School as well. So
okay. Yeah, he used to have a little party on him back in the day. He used to cut a rug.
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. I see some of the pictures from him in high school and stuff like that. I was like, he used to get loose. Shout out to that did back back, because I did an open mic out in Yuba City, mm-hmm. and somebody had just shout, "Oh man, you look like Christopher Hall." I'm like, "No, I don't. You just think all black. You just think all black people look alike. It's all good. No, not at all." "Oh yeah, I used to party with all the time. We party. All right, cool. We could party, but I'm not nothing close to him and shit like that." But speaking of Yuba City, man, shout out to Paul.
He'll love that.
I got
Paul Nixon. Yeah. He loves attention.
No, yeah, every time we link up, and brother, it's a show or whatever we gotta do, we gotta, for Paul. So shout out to Paul. Or even when I did your show out in Napa, he just pulled up out of nowhere. I'm like, "All right, Paul, man."
And you're not even surprised.
So not even surprised at all. But yeah, so shout out to Paul for being Paul.
For being you, Paul. Yeah. Shout out to you.
I remember first time I met Paul was happening. We gonna do a whole segment on Paul real quickly. Shut up. First time I met Paul was at we was doing the Comedy Burger show.
Okay.
At Ongayo's thing. I did a joke about Yuba City, and he just pulled me to the side like he was like the mafia and shit. He's like, "So you from Yuba City, huh?" I'm like, "No, maybe. I don't know." It's like, "Nah, man, it's all good, bro. It's all good. I'm from Yuba City too, man. You do your thing. No, yeah, so shout out to Paul.
You just made his life.
Yeah, shout out to Paul. I'll try to bring Paul on too. He'll bring a guest on this.
Oh my God.
That's the homie right there, for sure. But before we do, wrap up the whole podcast and all that good jazz, one thing that I always do when I bring people on is we do what was called the Mount Rushmore, which is basically your Mount Rushmore of comedians. And then, so yeah, I'll try to put you on the spot. But
I'm trying to think as soon as you said that.
Yeah.
I'd say for sure Pryor, he's on there. Pryor's on there. Eddie's on there. People get mad at me for saying that, but it's my life. Chris Tucker's on there for me.
Okay.
Because I would say he's a huge influence on me. Just that movie Rush Hour.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an outgoing person, but I felt like if I was, that would be me. Yeah. I would talk as much shit as he did in that mm-hmm. movie, and I feel like that is me. That's mm-hmm. me. Let me see who else would I put on there. Honestly, I gotta put Tony Roberts on there.
Yeah, not
I have to. Like, stage or at home watching TV, he's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. He said some of the craziest stuff for no reason. that I've ever heard. So he's definitely gonna be up there. So am I crook? I got one more.
Got one more.
Let me see. I would say it's more TV than stand up, but I have to say Red Fox.
Okay.
I think Sanford and Son is one of the greatest TV shows I've ever witnessed. Cause for it to be made in the 70s and be funny right now is amazing. And I don't mean just like little giggle. Like I can watch episodes now and be like, "That's hilarious, bro." So that he's my last member of the top.
All right. No, I ain't mad at that list. One thing you just talk about, like with Chris Tucker, I definitely get what you're saying as far as like there's always like that one comedian that we look at, it would be all like, that makes us look at it and be like, "Oh, okay, I can do that." Mm-hmm. I can definitely do that and shit. So, I definitely get what you're saying with Chris Tucker. And then one thing that I always find interesting, which is why I always do like this whole Mount Rushmore thing, is when I, like, especially like with comedians, there's always like somebody always names drop like a comedian that is like, I want to say like local, but like somebody that's like within our atmosphere, like how you say like with Tony Roberts and stuff like that, that accessibility and stuff like that, which again speaks to just the whole aspect of just, man, how strong the comedy scene is up here, because it's not, because it's a legit top four, like putting Tony Roberts up there with those people, it's a legit thing, you know? But then like say to be able to like they right here. Like, we ain't got no choice but to grow. And, like, if you have the opportunity to grow, learn from them, because then eventually, man, 10, 15, 20 years from now, shit, you're going to be on somebody's Mount Rushmore.
But, like, with Tony, like, most people wouldn't even have paid attention to it. It was one of the first shows I did with him at Cobb's, and it was mostly white. And I could tell, like, he wasn't nervous, but I know Tony mostly does black crowds. So Tony goes out there and... it was the shortest joke, but it made everybody fall out. He said, I saw a white lady with yellow teeth. She looked like a devil egg. The whole place fell out from that short little joke. And from there, he killed the rest of the night. But it's just like something that little short, like you can have dudes to write an hour joke and don't get that laugh that he got from that one joke.
Yeah, because white people love devil eggs. I get it.
You're right. You might be on the set, dude.
Talk about Marge.
You know her?
Shit. Yeah, no, you know, so that's no, that's definitely what's up, man. That's definitely cool. So yeah, so we had, you said it was it Eddie Murphy? No, Richard Pryor.
Yep.
And then it was
Murphy.
Was it Murphy? No, was it Murphy? No,
I said Murphy.
You said Murphy. So did you do five people? So
yeah, that's why I was like, well, you were looking at me. I'm like, okay, well.
No, my bad. So yeah, well. The black route, Rushmore. We gotta have somebody else. So yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah,
black people always bring one person extra. They didn't tell you about.
Oh yeah. This is like, so I brought my whole boy.
He cool though. He cool. My homie Red Fox.
You got a girl. You got a girl for my homie. All right. Show. Sure. All right. Cool. So yeah. We are gonna wrap up this episode. Like I said, this episode was brought to you again by the Comedy Cash Cow Competition. So if you are a stand-up comedian or know a stand-up comedian that wants to win $1,000 and star in their own movie, go to www.comedycashcow.com right now. It takes place May 25th at Vacaville, California. Did you sign up for it yet?
Not yet.
Okay. I'll send you the link after we.
All right. Hopefully I got the inside track.
Yeah.
I know the guy putting it on.
Yeah. Who is that? But yeah. So yeah, the Comedy Cash Cow Competition is going down May 25th. Where can people find you at?
I'm going to be at the Pink Martini April 10th. And I'm going to be at Be Bubbly April 18th. That's in Napa. Okay. So if you can make the Pink Martini, that's in Rockland, come check me out April 10th and April 18th in Napa. Be Bubbly Tasting Room. Come check me out.
Sure. And then any social media links where they could follow you at?
Instagram, follow me at Marcus Mangum Comedy. Or on Facebook, the same, Marcus Mangum Comedy.
All right, cool. Now you can follow me at Yeah Buddy Entertainment or at Funny Business Comedy. For people who are listening, if you're watching, it's just like right down there. You'll be right there. It's all right there. Bop, 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 bop. And then, yeah, so like I say, y'all, this has been the funny... I did it again. This has been the Yeah Buddy podcast, y'all. The Yeah Buddy... But if you want to listen to the Funny Business podcast, it is on the website, www.officialfunnybusiness.com. You can catch all 4 or 5 seasons of that. But yeah, this is the Yeah Buddy podcast. This is all me right here. I've been your host, Buddy. Ramming, and hey, this is Marcus Mangum, and we out, y'all. I'll catch y'all in the next episode. Deuces.